The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the topic I wanted to talk about tonight is mindfulness. This is kind of the fundamentals or basics of what we explore and teach here, the grounding of our meditation practice. And so I just wanted to explore a little bit what it is and how it works for us, you know, in the meditation practice. Actually, the more I practice mindfulness, the more I engage in this meditation, the more mysterious mindfulness seems to me. And so while I'll offer some suggested definitions, I feel like they just begin to get in the ballpark. It doesn't feel like a very precise definition. But basically, mindfulness is, we could say other words for it would be something like being present, knowing what's happening in the present moment while it's happening, being aware, witnessing experience. These are words. I think it's in some ways related to the very natural capacity that our minds have to kind of like reflect experience, to know that we know. As human beings, we have this self-reflexive capacity of mind that we know that we know. And in some ways, this is what makes us human. It's what makes us different than many other animals, that we can be self-aware. So I think that the quality of mindfulness is related to that capacity, that simple capacity for self-awareness, to know that we know, to be aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. And so it's related to a very ordinary quality of mind. It's related to something that we just have as human beings, this capacity that we have as human beings. In some ways, I think that the Buddha, in exploring his experience and discovering what helps us to free ourselves from our struggles, to begin to wake up to our human lives and to understand what's happening that creates our struggles, creates our dissatisfaction, our unease, our stress. It was a very amazing thing that the Buddha recognized this simple quality, this ordinary quality of mindfulness is really worth paying attention to. It's really worth cultivating. Mindfulness, this kind of knowing that we know, it happens to us all the time. You know, it's happened to us for all of our lives, only we may not have noticed or said, oh, I'm being mindful right now. You know, sometimes I think, I remember once when I was a kid, there was a moment when I woke up, I was at my grandmother's house, and I woke up early one morning and there was a mourning dove cooing outside, and it just felt like I was in some other world. And in that moment, now looking back, I realized I was present, I was mindful in that moment. I didn't have words for it. And so we've all experienced moments like that, but even more familiarly or more commonly, we experience moments in our day where mindfulness, where we just know what's happening while it's happening. I mean, we couldn't actually navigate our day without this. You know, to know where we are, to know what we're doing. We couldn't really get through our day without little moments of this being aware of what's happening while it's happening. But what usually happens when we become aware of what's happening is that we don't consciously recognize something like, oh, I've become aware. So we don't recognize mindfulness itself. We don't recognize this kind of quality of being present. But instead, we become aware, or we kind of land on, or kind of get interested in what it is that we've become aware of. And so maybe we're We're walking down the street and we see a big splash of color on the sidewalk, and we kind of orient to it, and it's like we'd been kind of lost in our thoughts, and suddenly we're there on the sidewalk. We know that we're on the sidewalk and we're seeing this thing, and we realize, oh, it's a piece of trash. And so we've become aware in that moment, but in that moment we may either decide to stoop down and pick up that trash and kind of not really recognize that we've become mindful, or maybe we start judging somebody for leaving the trash there, or whatever we do. We don't tend to recognize that we've become aware. And this is what the Buddha pointed us to. He pointed us to beginning to recognize this quality itself, not just what we are aware of, but that we are aware. And so this is the beginning of exploring mindfulness from the meditative perspective, to begin to be curious about what it means, what it actually means to be aware. Now, what I just said about, we typically in our daily lives, when we become aware, we tend to act on that thing or think about that thing or have ideas, views, opinions, beliefs, and it's like we surface from this non-aware world for just a moment, and then we submerge again. And often in that submerging, we are taking action on what we've become aware of. And what I want to really be clear about is that this mindfulness that we're cultivating, while it does cultivate the capacity to recognize what's happening in the present moment while it's happening with the non-reactive, non-judgmental frame of mind, it is not about not acting. It doesn't mean as we become mindful of experience that we just sit there and let experience kind of flow through us or wash through us. There's sometimes when we do that, sometimes when we explore that side of being mindful. But there are definitely times when we become aware of something and we recognize in that coming aware that action needs to be taken. What we explore, and I'll talk about this a little bit more in a bit, is what we explore is rather than reacting habitually to what we become aware of, we explore the possibility of acting from a place of kindness, of compassion, of wisdom, rather than from our habitual reactivity, which usually or often is reacting from aversion or greed or confusion as we meet experience. And so the becoming mindful, as we become aware and recognize, oh, I am aware, it opens a little space for us to begin to act from a different place, instead of acting from our habitual place, but to act from a different place, a new place. And so I'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. So often when we are not aware of these moments of recognizing what's happening, we, as I said, we kind of react in a habitual way. And what our habits tend to do when we meet experience is that when something pleasant happens in our experience, and we do, we tend to orient in a very kind of basic animal-like way. We tend to orient to pleasant, unpleasant. That kind of gets our attention. Pleasant or unpleasant. There are other pieces about our experience to get our attention to, but this is a real basic one. And so when something is pleasant, we tend to like it, we tend to want it, we tend to want more of it, we tend to want to try to hold on to it. When something's unpleasant, we tend to want to push it away, to get rid of it, to fix it, to change it. And so this is very natural. It's just what human beings do. This is what human beings do. And yet what happens is that we react kind of habitually without really recognizing the habitual nature of our response to experience. And those habitual responses to experience also contain some, let's say, distorted views about what will make us happy. So the very natural response that we think, oh, pleasant, want to hold on to that, want to keep that. Unpleasant, want to get rid of that, want to fix it, change it. That very natural response is based on kind of through our lives, we've discovered when we get something that we like, you know, get something that's pleasant and we like it, we get a little bit of a hit of happiness. It feels good. And when we get rid of something we don't like, feels like we've figured out how to be in control, figured out how to not be associated with something we don't like, that feels good too. And there's a little bit of a sense of, ah, yeah, that feels good. And essentially what we've learned in our lives, much of what we've learned in our lives is that happiness comes when we get what we want and get rid of what we don't want. And pretty much our experience has showed us that that's how happiness happens. And what we think or what our belief is that's the only way happiness can happen. That's the kind of belief that's operating along with that movement to get what I want, get rid of what I don't want, is this is the only way happiness will happen. Something along those lines. There's a kind of a distorted understanding that getting that thing will bring me some kind of happiness. And it does bring you some kind of happiness. It does bring you a moment of happiness. But what the belief in there is that it's kind of more like there's a belief that it's going to be a better, more extended kind of happiness. It's like this is as good as it gets kind of happiness. And it's kind of surprising when we actually start watching our own minds and beginning to see this pattern. And this is what mindfulness can begin to reveal, actually, too, as we start watching our minds and see this tendency to be pulled towards the pleasant and push away the unpleasant. There's some way that our minds actually believe that having that thing, you know, I've even seen with something as simple and as transient, my mind knows that having a piece of chocolate is a pretty transient happiness. But there's a way that the motivation and the desire and the pull towards that, in that pull, in that anticipation, in that experience of, oh, this is going to be good, the mind really believes that it's going to last. It's kind of amazing that the level of belief in there around happiness. And so this, the mistaken notion about this basically is that the happiness that comes from getting what we want, from getting what we don't want, is a pretty fleeting kind of happiness. It lasts for a short time and then it goes. And you can begin to explore this and experiment with this by just watching, you know. So you get something that you want. How long does that happiness actually last? You get rid of something you don't want. How long is it actually satisfying when you get rid of something you don't want? Typically, our minds are contented for a little while, and then they're actually what starts to happen is that we start searching for the next thing to either get or get rid of. Because that's when we were last happiest, when we were just about to get that thing or just about ready to get rid of that thing. And so that's the cycle that we're on, and we think that's as good as it gets in terms of happiness. And so this is a mistaken understanding based on not really understanding just how fluid in flux our experience is, just how fleeting and momentary pleasure and pain are. And so the practice or the typical or habitual way that we have of responding to experience when we're not mindful, when we're, you know, acting out of our habits, our habitual way of responding to the world is essentially reinforcing this kind of cycle of get a little bit of hit of happiness and then it passes, it goes. There's a feeling perhaps of, oh, not so good anymore. Where's the next moment of happiness going to come from? And so we're caught on this cycle. So when we're not mindful, we're not really seeing that we are caught on this cycle. And actually, sometimes even when we're caught on this cycle, we experience directly struggle, stress, dissatisfaction related to being caught on this cycle. So not only does the happiness last only fleetingly, but many times it happens that we aren't able to get what we want. We aren't able to keep those pleasant things. We aren't able to get rid of those unpleasant things. And then we really suffer. You know, then we feel like we failed somehow, or the universe is conspiring against us. And so this not seeing this pattern, not seeing the kind of habitual way that we get caught, or the habitual way that we respond to the world, is a big reason that we struggle and that we suffer. And so this is actually what the Buddha pointed to when he pointed to the second noble truth, that our struggles, the suffering that we experience is related primarily to not being associated with unpleasant or not having what's pleasant, but rather a feeling of dissatisfaction about what's here, a craving for it to be otherwise, a craving for pleasant things to stay, a craving for unpleasant things to go. And so beginning to understand that, then as we open to being mindful, we begin to see this pattern at work. And we begin to also see a way out. We begin to recognize that with mindfulness, we can just be curious about experience, witness it. And again, it sounds like I'm saying not do anything. And there is a way that we start to explore. Our mindfulness practice may begin by exploring the witnessing side of it a little bit more, because there's so much in our lives that we habitually act on that we actually don't need to act on. There are many things in our lives that we do need to act on. If we are seeing injustice in the world, we need to act on that. If we see danger coming to a child, we need to act on that. There are many things that we need to take action on. And there are many things that we are habitually taking action on that we don't particularly need to take action on. And so waking up or beginning to explore mindfulness takes not just becoming aware of what's happening in the present moment, because our habitual way of being aware of what's happening in the present moment is to act on it, to do something, to try to fix it, to change it, to hold on to it. And this is not so much what is meant by mindfulness. One of my teachers, one of my teachers from Burma, Saito Utejaniya, talks about mindfulness alone not being quite sufficient, that it needs to be paired with some understanding, essentially some understanding of this whole cycle that I just described, some understanding about what it is that catches us, what it is that hooks us and makes us believe we have to act in certain ways and can't simply have a sense of ease with what's here, beginning to explore what it might it be to be at ease with, so things aren't exactly the way I want them to be. What might that mean? So Saito Utejaniya sometimes says, mindfulness alone is not enough. We need some wisdom to go with that mindfulness, some wisdom to inform or influence or direct the mindfulness in a particular way. And the Buddha would call this right mindfulness or wise mindfulness. Saito Utejaniya gives the example. He says, you know, if you went up to somebody on the street, just anybody on the street who's angry, and said, do you know that you're angry? They'd probably look at you like you're nuts. Well, yeah, of course I know I'm angry. But the way that they know they're angry is probably not, oh, this is the human experience of anger, and probably more around, they done me wrong. I got to figure out how to get back, or how to prove that I'm better, or you know, something that we might be motivated to do out of anger. And so this begins to point to the shift of perspective that wise mindfulness or right mindfulness we need to bring or that we need to explore in right mindfulness. So paired with wisdom, paired with some understanding of what we are exploring. And, you know, there's different ways to look at wisdom. When I use the word wisdom, and my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, uses this word wisdom more than any other teacher I had ever met. And when he was using it at first, I was like, wow, it seems like some big, amazing thing he's talking about. And I was kind of, you know, thinking of this really grand notion of wisdom. And it's actually can be expressed in some very simple ways. One way that it can be expressed is just with the curiosity, what is the human experience of this present moment experience? So it's looking instead of how does this affect me as a personally, what is the personal impact on it, beginning to look at the more universal experience of being a human being, feeling this thing, experiencing this thing. That's one way to bring in the wisdom of the Buddha's teaching. Just being curious about what is the human experience. And so just the simple instruction that I gave in the guided meditation, breathing in, know that you're breathing in. What is it to be a human being that's breathing? That brings in the perspective that begins to point to the understanding that helps to uncover the mistaken notions around liking and not liking, wanting and not wanting. So essentially, the basic definition of wisdom that is offered in the Buddhist teaching is something about how suffering is created, how suffering comes about. And that description that I gave around wanting to hold on to things that are unpleasant, wanting to hold on to things that are pleasant, wanting to get rid of things that are unpleasant, that kind of contraction around that and the non-acknowledgement of the impermanent nature of experience, like essentially the holding on is acting in denial of the impermanent nature of experience. We can experience something pleasant for a moment. And actually what I find as I become more mindful, as mindfulness, this kind of curious kind of mindfulness, this kind of mindfulness of just, well, what's this like? You know, what's it like to be a human being that's sitting outside on a sunny day with a cool breeze blowing? Wow, this is pleasant. You know, and in some ways, the mindfulness there allows a real opening to a pleasant in a very different way than the kind of pleasant that's trying to figure out how to hold on to that. How can I keep this moment? Oh, maybe I need to whip out my iPhone and take pictures of this place so I can remember it later, or, you know, whatever we might do to try to hold on to this moment. And so the exploration around mindfulness actually takes us more fully into the moment, and we can appreciate pleasant in a whole different way. It's an appreciation that actually is intimate with the pleasant, partly because it's not trying to cling to it, not trying to squeeze the life out of it. And so it's kind of got an intimacy to it. And in that intimacy with the present moment, we will also have intimacy with unpleasant experience. That's part of the nature of being a human being. And so, you know, part of the, what I've seen too, I mean, my mind has tended to orient towards unpleasant. That's one of the, we each have habits around this, and some people might tend to orient towards pleasant. My mind, I would go anywhere or do anything and be kind of like, okay, where's everything unpleasant? Let me get rid of it all so that I can be okay, you know. So I tended to orient to the unpleasant. And what I discovered is that I was so oriented to getting rid of the unpleasant that I would miss the pleasant. And I would actually miss the fact that the unpleasant didn't actually last that long or didn't need to be so much of a bother much of the time. So there were these misunderstandings, and beginning to explore experience from this question of what is the human experience of this experience, I began to see that even something as unpleasant as an itch or even a pain in the body had a very dynamic, impermanent kind of coming and going nature to it. And that when I kind of zeroed in on it as a thing, as a problem, that very zeroing in on the unpleasant solidified it, made it more unpleasant. And so this is the way our habitual mind works. And when we can begin to be curious about the human experience, we begin to touch into the more dynamic nature of experience and see pleasant comes and goes, unpleasant comes and goes. And so this is some of the understanding that comes along with wise attention, wise mindfulness. And it can be expressed in some very simple ways, such as, you know, just be curious about this experience. What is this? What is it like to be a human being experiencing this breath? What is it like to be a human being experiencing frustration? What is it like to be a human being experiencing anger or joy or happiness? All of the shades of what it is to be a human being. Exploring it from the human perspective rather than what does it mean about me? And what does it mean about who I am in this world? So that curiosity of human experience. It sounds like a simple thing. It sounds like almost a nothing thing in some ways. You know, it's like when I first heard this instruction, I read it in a book. You know, I was working with a lot of anger in my experience, and I'd read this instruction about, well, just see if you can notice what it's like to be angry. And when I heard that, I thought, well, what good is that going to do? How can that possibly help? Won't that just make me more angry? And yet, the encouragement was to notice just the experience of it, as opposed to what I tended to do when I was angry, which was jump on the thoughts about who I was angry with and what I was going to do to them and how miserable they were going to be because I was angry at them. All of those thoughts that go along with anger. And so, you know, I didn't understand how it would work to just become aware of this is what it's like to be angry. But I was willing to try it, you know, so I'd read that in a book and it's like, well, okay, nothing else has worked. I am being overrun by this anger, and so I need to try something, and why not give it a try? So exploring that possibility, you know, what does it mean to be a human being that's angry? Within a very short time, I began to understand not only that it works, but something about how it works. You know, so that I began to definitely experience that. I mean, the first thing I noticed was that when I woke up into the anger and, wow, yeah, I'm angry. It's like, wow, I don't know what to do with this, but I guess I go back to work. And in that, in retrospect, what I can see is that the mindfulness, because before that moment, I was basically frozen at my desk, lost in the world of anger, lost in the world of revenge, and not able to work. And the moment when mindfulness returned, and it's like I didn't know much how to pay attention to it, but it's kind of like, oh, this is, wow, yeah, that, wow, this hurts. Ooh, this doesn't feel very good. That's about all I knew. And I didn't know much what to do with it, but in that moment, I could go back to work. And what I began to recognize is that the mindfulness was breaking in to the mental thoughts, the fuel, the gasoline that my mind was throwing onto the fire of anger and just whipping up the flames. And so the mindfulness like broke into that and let me make another choice. Let me do something different. And within a very short time, the anger was no longer ruling my life. Within a few weeks of this practice. And this was just doing this in my daily life. This wasn't even looking at it in meditation. Actually, I wasn't even interested in meditation at that point. But I was interested in understanding the anger. And so this simple instruction, be curious about the human experience. Very powerful. You don't even have to understand very much about the human experience. Over the course of years of watching anger, I've learned a tremendous amount about the human experience of anger and a tremendous amount about how it's constructed and put together in this mind and understanding various things about how it can be let go. So tremendous learning about the human experience of anger and how that human experience is expressed in this being. And that understanding has led to a lot of freedom, a lot of letting go. Way, way less anger in my life. So this little simple instruction has a great power. And yet, as I said at the beginning, all I could do was recognize, oh yeah, I know I'm angry. Wow, this hurts. That's about all I could do. But from that, the practice grew. The practice unfolded. The practice developed. So that's one side of the mindfulness. The wise mindfulness is recognizing that you're present and being curious about the human experience. That's the simplest way I can put it. What is the human experience right now? Another piece of wise mindfulness is recognizing that often in our relationship to experience, in our as we are mindful of experience, we can be aware of things, like, for instance, be aware of a pain in the knee or be aware of anger, but not be also aware that there's kind of a relationship we have to that or an attitude we have about it. And so, as we begin to recognize and become familiar with anger, for instance, for me, as I practiced with this over the course of several years after that first experience. I worked with anger for quite a while. And there was one stretch of time when I kind of realized that I wanted to pay attention to the anger in order to make it go away. I wanted to figure out the anger so that I would never have to experience or never have to have anger again. Because I began to realize just how unpleasant it was, how painful it was. And so now associated with mindfulness of anger was an agenda. Put it under the microscope, figure it out, pull it apart. And that agenda had some aversion to it. And so in a way there was an anger to the anger or an aversion or aversion to the anger. And that wasn't seen as clearly. And so another piece of our wise mindfulness is beginning to be curious about, okay, so this is happening in our present moment experience. There's this pleasant thing or this unpleasant thing. And what's the relationship to that? How am I with that? I want it to continue. I want to figure it out. I want to get rid of it. So just beginning to be curious about the relationship to experience also. Often our relationship to experience is kind of hidden in our subconscious. There's a little bit of a subconscious agendas going. And we may or may not be able to see some of those subconscious agendas. I mean, I spent quite a bit of time noticing anger and, paying attention to it with this agenda. until I began to feel the suffering of that agenda, until I began to recognize how painful it was to zoom in on it and try to figure out how to get rid of it. So it took some time before I could begin to see the agenda itself. And there was a lot of learning that happened before that. So it's not like, you know, if there's an agenda or an attitude that's not seen, it's not like it's a big problem. And sometimes they take their time to show themselves. So you know, it's not like you have to dig to find these agendas or attitudes. But every now and then it can be useful to just check in. What is my relationship to what's happening? And sometimes in that checking in, sometimes it just becomes really clear. You know, it's like, yeah, there's that pain in my knee and I don't like it. I want it to go away. And so we may be focusing on the pain, not really recognizing the whole bracing quality in the rest of the body and the feeling of pushing away, the feeling of aversion. And so as we begin to become aware of these attitudes, there's not actually that much to do other than recognize, okay, yeah, there's this pain and not liking. That's what's the human experience of having pain and not liking it. And so it's just like we expand the container of what we know. We deepen the understanding of what we know by checking in. What is this relation? What is the relationship to what is being known? So, as mindfulness gets more established, as we have this curiosity of what the human experience of mindfulness is, we begin to have a perspective or an attitude that encompasses or includes what we can call right mindfulness. And so the attitude, when I mention the attitude, what is the attitude or the relationship to experience, it's not always going to be something problematic. I mean, the word attitude might have that flavor for some, but it includes not only relationships of greed or aversion or confusion, but also it includes relationships of interest, of curiosity, of non-reactivity, of non-judgmental, of not being judgmental, of not having an agenda, of not having a personal agenda. And so as we as mindfulness begins to get established, we can also, in exploring the relationship, begin to get familiar with some like beautiful qualities of mind, like calm and curiosity and equanimity and kindness. Sometimes the flavor of meeting experience when we recognize, oh wow, I'm aware of this thing happening, and it feels like there's an allowing attitude there. That allowing attitude includes a kind of kindness. And so opening to those qualities of kindness, of curiosity, it begins to give us a whole different terrain of what it means to be happy. Because we can begin to see that even while we're watching something that's challenging, like, you know, I began to recognize that sometimes I'd be observing anger and I'd be really happy. Be like, yeah, wow, this is what it's like. And there'd be a delight in the mind that could know that. And as we begin to recognize those qualities of what it means to be non-reactive, we can begin to touch into some of that delight, that joy, that curiosity, and a whole new terrain of what it means to be happy begins to be revealed through this cultivation of mindfulness. And we see that we don't necessarily have to get rid of something unpleasant for the mind to be completely at ease, not only completely at ease, but actually delighted, happy, at ease, at peace, curious. And there we get a different kind of we touch into a different way that happiness can come about. Rather than getting something that we want, it's more about coming in alignment with things are changing. It doesn't work to hold on. It doesn't always work to try to manipulate the world to be the way I'd like it to be. And so we get a taste of a different kind of happiness that has a more, it's kind of a more satisfying happiness as well. It's not so dependent on things being a certain way. It's more dependent on understanding the nature of being human. So we have some time if there's comments or questions about anything I've said, or yeah, then would you pass the mic back?
Thank you. Hi, so you just mentioned like the nature of being human, and you talked about like the human experience. And I see personally, like, that might be problematic because, like, I say, like, the human experience, I might be tempted to, like, extrapolate onto other experiences. So I thought maybe, like, a human experience.
A human experience, this human experience.
Yeah, just, oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that can be useful. Not there is no the human experience, but there is the experience of being human in this moment that is not that is kind of the other piece around the wisdom that the Buddha talks about, is that what's happening right now in this moment is conditioned. It's come into being based on our experience in the past, the conditions in the world, and that human conditioning, the conditioning process is a human experience, that we are conditioned as human beings. We all have different conditions that come together to create this moment's experience for each of us. But what we explore, essentially a piece of what we explore with the mindfulness, is understanding that it is conditioned. You know, that this moment isn't just about this moment, but that it's a result of, you know, basically everything that's happened since the beginning of time until this moment. It's the threads that come into this human experience in this moment are vast. And we can't actually find them all. But we can begin to recognize certain key pieces of that thread, those threads. So, for instance, for me, as I pointed to, I tended to orient to unpleasant. You know, that was something about the way I was raised, or something about the way I came into this world that I learned somehow early on that I could find happiness by fixing things or getting rid of things, and that was the orientation. So this human being was conditioned in that way. So the human nature, or the nature of experience, has three basic components as a human being. There's experience is impermanent. It's always changing. It's unreliable, and because it's impermanent, it's unreliable as a place to land, to say, yes, this is what I'm going to finally be able to land on to be happy for the rest of my life. And so it's unreliable, and it's uncontrollable. And the uncontrollability piece, and that's sometimes referred to as, you know, it's not self, it's not me, it's not mine. And that's pointing to this, that what we are, I mean, there's a kind of way that, you know, certainly this being here is different than that being there and that being there, and we all have our own conditioning. And so there's a way in which there's an individual process going on in each of us. But what we attribute to that process something solid, and we attribute a solid sense of self to that process. And that's an illusion. And it's an attribution more than a reality. And as we begin to recognize the process nature of experience and the conditioned nature of experience, that's another thing that's revealed as we are curious about experience as human experience instead of as personal experience. We start to recognize how we were conditioned and that we were conditioned is a big understanding. You know, that just recognizing, yeah, this, the way I am about this particular thing, I can begin to see how it was connected to all these other things. And for me, recognizing, for instance, a pattern, you know, a pattern of self-hatred for me, this another big pattern in my life. Anger was a huge pattern. Self-hatred was another huge pattern. And as I began to open to and be curious about that pattern of self-hatred, one of the big understandings I came to is that it was conditioned. It wasn't inherent part of me. It was conditioned, and I could even begin to see some of the pieces that put it together from my history. And in seeing that it was conditioned, boy, that created a whole different relationship with that pattern of self-hatred. I began to understand it not as me, not as who I was, but just as a condition unfolding, and also that it might be possible for different conditions to unfold and not necessarily be hooked by that pattern all the time. And that indeed is what has unfolded with the mindfulness practice, the real letting go of that pattern through the seeing of its conditioned nature. And so pointing to the human experience is really pointing to those three aspects, the impermanent, unreliable, and conditioned nature of experience. So thanks for the question.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions, other comments?
As you spoke about how causes and conditions work, for lack of a better word, to bring us to wherever, whatever experience we're having. I'm thinking about my grandchildren at the moment and wondering, is there evidence that mindful parenting can shift the way in which a child experiences his or her childhood and therefore later his or her adulthood?
Well, certainly, how a child is raised, with what conditions a child is met by their parents, will shape their life. Definitely. If a parent is more cognizant of their own patterns, and the habitual tendency, I mean, this is how patterns get passed through generation from generation to generation, right? I mean, people, you know, were trained or raised by a parent who was, you know, behaved in a certain way, and we replicate that pattern. And so if a parent can begin to be aware of a pattern and be mindful of it and interrupt that pattern, it would create different conditions for the child. So, you know, I don't know if there's research done on it.
Are there guides?
Guides to mindful parenting?
Yes. I ran across a book entitled Buddha Mom. And I haven't read it, but it's sitting in my shelf.
You know, I think that, I mean, certainly there's the group here, if there's any parents in the group, or grandparents, I would think would be welcome. There's a mindful parenting group here at IMC.
Yes, I know, but what I'm thinking of are my grandchildren who live in Philadelphia.
I see, yeah, yeah.
That may be too narrow a focus on my part, but I'm really wondering if.
And yet, what you can offer too, I mean, whenever you're with them, is, I mean, and also there's one of the beautiful things I think about being mindful is that you are more present. I mean, as human beings, this is one of the things we really want, and as children, actually need to be reflected, to be seen. And when we're mindful with each other, we're much more present with each other. We're much more able to see each other, and that's another wholesome aspect of it. And so I would encourage you, when you are with your grandkids or talking on the phone with them, or, you know, if it's like, you know, be that mirror, be present. You know, I think even little bits of it can be very powerful. Yeah.
Thank you.
But there may be books out there. I don't have kids, so.
Buddha Mom may be one of them.
Anyone else want to ask anything or say anything, reflect on anything? Okay. So just take a moment to appreciate that we've spent this time together. And one of the beautiful things about the way mindfulness works is that it is contagious. It's, you know, anger is contagious and confusion is contagious, but mindfulness is also contagious. And so may our mindfulness be contagious. May our efforts to explore our own human experience be of benefit to ourselves, but also to other beings that we meet, and ripple out to touch, maybe in some fashion, all beings everywhere. May all beings be at ease. Thank you for your attention.